Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi everybody, it's Penny and I'm here with Jill Pay this evening. Matthew's not joining us, but we're talking about conscious parenting. And basically, you know, it's a minefield. You know, everybody has their own ideas about what conscious parenting actually is. And nothing really prepares us for being a parent. You know, the sleepless nights, the chronic tiredness, the joy, the worry, you know, feeling that you're not enough, you know, the need for organisation being one step ahead, if you're lucky, you know, the constant washing, cleaning, changing in the early days to the why and the no's of the twos. And you know, beyond understanding why our children act the way that they do and the impact of our parenting style, you know, how we react when our child is under stress, the strategies of how to grow their self-esteem and help them develop effective study methods, you know, fostering their natural talents, you know, remaining calm and centered when it, you know, you feel like you're in the middle of a battlefield, establishing loving authority in your home, which creates open communication and builds trust, building an atmosphere of harmony rather than criticism or bickering or put downs, and resolving disagreements and conflict constructively without power struggles. You know, how to recognise our parenting habits and how they can destroy self-esteem and weaken relationships. As I said, it's a minefield, and when you actually look at all of this, you just think, you know, why on earth do we have children? You laugh hysterically and usually come up with, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, or you may have not had much choice. It may have been that, you know, you weren't necessarily trying for a child and it happened anyway. And it's, as I said, you know, Jill is with me today, so, you know, we are both mums, so we understand the stresses and the strains, and we're not talking about it without hands-on experience. So hi Jill, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. Yeah, really happy to be here and have a, you know, a great discussion, I'm sure, about all of these things. And, you know, I think one of the things that I always felt was that it doesn't come with a guidebook, you know. There's no instruction manual.
when you're faced with having a child, yeah, definitely. And, you know, conscious parenting is to help your children develop healthy brains, you know, healthy self-esteem and trust, and nurture their talents and, you know, bond, you know, and establish a great bond between you and them. And, you know, it sounds, you know, really easy when you sort of read it out, or you talk about it. It sounds really easy, but, you know, the actual, I think very much so, it's the shock of realising this tiny wee scrap of humanity belongs to you, and you are responsible to them. And when I say belongs to you, yes, you know, obviously in the bigger sense, no, they don't. But, you know, you are responsible for them. And if you don't look after them, they're not going to thrive. And it's really, really interesting stuff. And I think, you know, for me, it's looking at, you know, the different steps, sometimes looking at the different stages. So this evening we'll definitely be looking at, you know, basically from naught right the way through up to about 12. And you know, different areas of the brain are, you know, developing at different stages. And when you think of, you know, those first 3 months of naught to 3 months, and I can remember this with Hector, it's just like, whoa, this guy, you know, and obviously he's a boy, so this guy's brain is developing at such an amazing rate. And they have, you know, millions of neuro connections within the brain. And within the first 3 months, it's really interesting when you actually look at some of this. Within the first 3 months, actually half of them disconnect, because it's within those first 3 months that they're actually looking at what they need and what they don't need. So it's like, you know, you have this massive neural network in their brains, and it switches, some of them switch off. You know, obviously Hector was bottle fed, he wasn't breastfed. So some of those neural pathways which are open in some babies who are breastfed would have closed down in Hector's brain. So again, it's just incredible. And when you actually think about it, the hind brain, or what they call the reptile brain, is, you know, is where fight or flight is obviously, you know, the hind brain is very much about survival. It's not about thriving, it's about survival. And the fight and flight mechanism is very, very prominent in a baby's brain. But the other, you know, so there's option one, there's the flight. There's option two, which is the fight. And there's option three, which we hardly ever think about. And the option three is freeze. Mm-hmm. So a flight is all about anxiety and needing to move and avoiding confrontation. So, you know, to flee is about moving and getting yourself away from the perceived danger. And, you know, it's really important to realise again with fight, obviously it's about aggression and it's about being aggressive. And it's, again, really important, you know, when babies get to, as they mature slightly, and they get to the kicking stage, you know, the kicking, the biting, the pulling hair stage. And it's about overpowering whatever it is that they are stressed by. And the most important thing to remember with as a parent, as a conscious parent, is don't fight back. Whatever you do, don't fight back. Because that just makes the situation get more and more out of hand. The most important thing to do is to actually acknowledge their outrage. So they may be crying because they're not being fed, or it may be that, you know, they're not getting what they want. But it's just it's actually acknowledging it for them, that what they're feeling, whether that be mad, sad, glad or scared. And that way you can actually help them pattern interrupt and get out of the fight and the habits of maybe kicking or biting or pulling hair. You know, it's really important to give them a different option. And, you know, obviously with the freeze, it's really, you know, they're looking for protection here. So they have a tendency to lose themselves when they freeze, and you can see it. And I found it fascinating to watch Hector when he went through this. He would have that glassy look and look like he was going unpresent. And that was his way of showing us that he'd gone into freeze. And he didn't know what he wanted. There was a lack of desire, or an apathy, or a listlessness. And, you know, if you offer support, you know, it's very much just about being there and holding them. and making sure, you know, whatever age they are, whether they're a baby or whether they're a toddler or whether they're going, you know, further on, as in Hector now, who's three. It's very much about that. And then offering them something like, you know, for me, it's, do you want a hug? You know, what, you know, and giving him that hug and making sure he realizes that hugs are, don't cost him anything. They're free sort of attitude. And, you know, it's so important to remember that fight, flight and freeze is very much present in all of a child's life, right the way through to adulthood, and actually in adulthood too. We tend to, whenever we are stressed as adults, we go back to that first etiology or that first wound. And it may well be at the age of, you go back to the age of three. And it's really important to realise that with children, they need that type of support. They need the support to help them through it, to, as I was saying earlier on, pattern interrupt. So, Jill, what's your take on that? Have you found that with your three? Or?
Well, it's a long time ago now. Mine are all in their 30s. But, I mean, it's fascinating hearing you put it like that, because actually when I look back at or even babies that I know now, you know, who are very young, looking at how the important thing, I think, is also is that how they learn, and how when we, our patterns, our behavior patterns, can also either reinforce or support theirs, so they can feel safe, so that whatever, with whichever reaction they've gone into, that it's safe, but there's a way out of it.
Absolutely.
So it's that reassurance and support and or reflection to them in the way we are. So if we catch ourselves becoming frustrated or you know, in a similar mode, then we can do the pattern interrupt, and therefore they can see how that works as well. So it's
it's about, you know, one, showing by example, but also helping them learn and explore. You know, one of the things that we found with Hector, especially if he went into flight, so he wanted to flee more than anything else, and it was either a loud noise or whatever it was that made him retract into self and feel uncomfortable, that humour and making him laugh was the best possible pattern interrupt that we could actually do. And it may well be tickling, it may be silly, singing a silly song, but it was, you know, very much about him hearing either myself, my own voice, or my husband's, Luke's voice, to make sure that he grounded in that and knew that he was safe. Because, you know, one of the things that Hector was always very, very good at was movement. He was either a crawler or a wriggler or, he would show us. And, you know, at the age of three, he still is a wriggler. He's like, so we used to do wiggly worm type songs or whatever it was, just to make him laugh and make him know that he was safe. But he didn't get into the fight response until he was a little bit older. But then he was he definitely was a kicker and a biter and a puller of hair. And I think, again, it's very much about realizing as a conscious parent that it's not personal. He's not personally taking it, kicking you and biting you and pulling your hair. It may feel so, it may feel like that, and it can be incredibly challenging, especially if you've got a very enthusiastic child like we have, because he's, as he gets older, the kicking and the biting and the pulling the hair gets quite quite powerful. You know, it can be quite sharp. And it's really, as I said, really important not to take your frustration back out at him. You know, even a tap on the hand is not helpful. It's actually, you know, making sure that, you know, you share the outrage with him and go, oh, you know, that was terrible, and reinforce the fact that he and acknowledge his feelings, as I was saying, and I'm just saying, oh, that must have made you mad, or whatever it is. Even if he is not vocal at this stage and not very good at language, if she feels that her feelings are being acknowledged, then, you know, that's where you actually start to build trust. And, you know, and trust is so important between children and adults. It really is important. Yeah. So, yeah, and hugs are always very good. Whether it be option one, two, or three, whether it's fight, flight, or freeze, it's really important that cuddles and hugs are important. And I think one of the biggest things for me, one of the biggest awareness is I had early on was, you know, it's like the news flash of the whole thing is, news flash, by the way, kids are not made to sit still. They will not. They are not made to sit still. You know, if they are sitting still, then, you know, it's up to us as parents to encourage them to have movement. Going back to, obviously, Hector is, he doesn't sit still at all. I mean, he just doesn't, his movement are us. But it's really important to not get into, you know, we all do it, and I have done it many, many times. Sometimes to sit them in front of a TV program or whatever, and then be able to go and get on with whatever you need to go on and get on with. But really limiting the amount of time that kids actually sit and stare at screens, whether that be on the TV or whether it be an iPad or a game console or whatever, because actually they're not built for that. And it doesn't help with encouraging their brains to grow. You know, again, it's really important that they have a bunch of different things to do during the day. You know, although I'm a children's nurse and I've done child psychology, it was really, you know, you think you're going to get a nice, quiet, peaceful baby or peaceful child. You know, I hate to actually say this to you, but it ain't going to happen. And one of the things that I learned very early on was, you know, that climbing is really important for, you know, a young brain to develop, because they have to learn how to balance, they have to learn how to trust, they have to learn how to, you know, look at, if they're climbing trees, look at a tree and see the root up the tree, and they're using and connecting many different areas of their brain. And this is really good for a developing child. And I know I used to love climbing trees myself as a child. And, you know, I'm sure you did too, Jill, didn't you?
Oh, my God. I mean, I used to love all those kind of things. I mean, daredevil or what, you know, we used to go like on the swing until it was going almost over. For ages I was obsessed with doing somersaults over and over again and things like that, you know, and just feeling the buzz of it afterwards as well. And I think it's really important, the whole aspect of play is so important for development, you know, and allowing children to explore through play. Penny, as you say, you know, in as many different ways as possible, climbing, running, being with other peers, We always joke, don't we, that when children have their Christmas presents, the things they play with most are the cardboard boxes, and that's
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
and that's purely because they want to use their imagination. They don't want necessarily to have it all spoon-fed. They actually want to engage their imagination and creativity. And I remember mine when they were young, they were always making dens. If it was a rainy day and we weren't able to go out, they'd make dens in the living room, and
Absolutely.
like
Blankets come in like real handy.
blankets. Yeah,
Cushions.
and absolutely. And but otherwise we'd be out all the time. We would literally be out exploring and doing things. And I think it's really, really important. And I think going back a little bit to what you were saying about the fight or flight and the emotional is actually, if you can support your child at that very early age, that is the very key to having emotional intelligence as they begin to grow and mature. It's
Absolutely,
just
and it is really, again, as I'm saying, conscious parenting is a minefield because everybody will have their own ideas, and depending on what they've read, and there's some great stuff on obviously the internet and everything else. When you actually Google conscious parenting, you'll be completely and utterly overwhelmed with the amount of articles and courses and various other bits and pieces that will come back at you via the net. But it's sometimes it's real basic stuff, and it's remembering that even down to food, if once to wean or not to wean, this is the question, sort of attitude. And it's being child-centered and child-led to a certain degree. And when I say a certain degree, the last thing you want is to allow children. You are the adult, therefore there must be some discipline, and there must be some ground rules that are put down. But one of the biggest, I think, for me, one of the biggest ground rules or things that I found was so important with a toddler was making sure that when Hector first started eating, it's really important that they have a balanced diet. Now, both my husband is a vegetarian. I am, what you call them, pescatarian. I eat fish. And one of the foods that is so important for children to get with a growing brain is the omega-3. And it's making sure, obviously, omega-3s come from oily fish, and it's really important that omega-3s, again, don't rush out and buy loads of omega-3 supplements, because that's not how it works with children. They need the real stuff. And it was one of the things that, obviously Luke and I talked about very much, because he is a vegetarian, that actually I was perfectly okay with, again, Hector being mostly vegetarian, but the omega-3s and the fish that he really needed, he could have whilst he was actually growing up. And then again, it's very much people will make up their own minds as they grow. But the real food, not the good old fast food, but the real food, and making sure that they get plenty of varied vegetables, etc., etc., etc. And I'm not here to bash any vegetarian agenda here, because I'm not vegetarian myself. However, it's getting them to taste things and realizing what they love. I mean, one of the amazing things that we found with Hector was he's completely and utterly addicted to mushrooms. And we just look at, what what's this about? What's this mushroom about? But literally, he would eat them raw. He would eat them, you know, cooked. He just loved mushrooms. And obviously, it was providing him... Yeah, he still loves them now at three. But, you know, when he was a toddler, when he was sort of 9 months old, I couldn't believe that he would eat mushrooms. And it was really quite hilarious because, you know, mushrooms have a certain pungency when they hit the nappy stage. And I just look at it and go, oh, my God. And I tried to actually reduce the amount of mushrooms he was having, but he wasn't having it. He'd actually literally just go through a pallet of bloody mushrooms, you know, with lunch. Just used to shake my head. Anyway, we're coming up for a break. So we'll see you on the other side.
Conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part. Because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, so we're back. It's Penny and Jill, and we're talking about conscious parenting and having a few laughs here. And it was funny, Chris was just talking to us during the break, and he was just saying, is it just the males that lose all of their connections? And I went, no, it's as many females have. So I'm not being sexist because I'm talking about my son. It happens to both females and male children. So the other thing I wanted to just spend a couple of minutes talking about is sleep. And, you know, from the parental point of view, you know, when the children are asleep, it's just like everybody just goes, oh, relax. But it's so important, however old the child is that they are actually getting enough sleep. Because it's during the sleep, it's like that's when the brain does all of the maintenance. You know, it's like a car in some ways. If you keep on driving the car and driving the car and keep on focusing, then you have no time to do the maintenance. And brain maintenance in children is so important. And, you know how tired you get when you don't get enough sleep, and how much focus you lack when you are in sleep deprivation. And also your memory becomes incredibly poor. So, for a child to, when you're beginning to talk, obviously, and maybe give instructions or trying to build vocal stuff, it's really important to make sure that the child is getting enough sleep so it knows what has been said to them. Because, poor sleep again leads to anxiety and depression. So it's getting them into a routine. As a youngster and as a toddler, they should be getting 12 hours sleep a night, from 7 till 7. It may be broken, but they, it's encouraging them to go back to sleep. And it, again, this is one of the things that took a while for my, myself and my husband to crack, was actually getting Hector down at 7 o'clock in the evening and making sure that he actually slept. He does get up sometimes during the night and changes, making sure that you put your child to bed in his bed or his cot at the beginning. If he moves then into the big bed or your bed or beside your bed, then that's okay. But you've got to make sure that you begin the routine, because if you don't, you're going to have a monster on your hands at some stage, and it is the regularity that is important, more important than the numbers of hours of sleep, to be honest. Did you find that you had problems with them, getting them down?
I think establishing the routine, because I had three under five, you see, so I mean, I would have literally lost my mind if I hadn't had some kind of routine, but we made it fun. So, and I remember really clearly at one point, Camilla, my middle child, turned round to me, and well, she must have been four or five, and she went, "It's dinner time, bath time, bedtime." And I went, "Yes, it is." So she had got that one. And actually that felt like a really high level of security for them, as well as giving them, what they needed in terms of the routine. And of course, occasionally they might have been sick or something might happen, but the routine was more or less consistent. And it was actually sanity for all of us, I have to say, because then absolutely. I could, and I think, like you said, Penny, when the kids are asleep, and you've had a really good day, or they've done a lot and you've been busy, and there's that moment when everyone's calm and asleep. I mean, I always used to sing to them, read to them as well when they were going to sleep, and I know you do with Hector, and that was such a night. That's a lovely time of day, really lovely time of day, and so that they would naturally relax. Sometimes I'd be asleep before they were, though, I have to say, in those circumstances. But
I can remember that that photograph, that a really famous photograph of me when Hector was probably only a few weeks old. And I, my hair is stuck all over the place. I've got my glasses on the top of my head, and he's asleep and I was asleep, and we're just sitting on the sofa and it's just like complete and utter, And I think very much so at the beginning, for me, it was making sure that actually I would take a nap when he napped, because otherwise, at the very beginning, when your baby's waking up with alarming regularity sometimes to be fed during the night, it's really important to make sure that you get cat naps and you actually make sure that you're actually getting some sleep in, because otherwise you do get stressed and you do have bouts of anxiety of, oh, you know, is this temperature really, you know, too high, or what should I be doing? And is he teething? Is he, you know, what's actually going on? If you are sleep deprived as an adult, it's like a form of torture. It really is, because your mind goes to mush. And you really do feel, I think, very much in those first 12 months of having a newborn, it's you think you've hit Alzheimer's disease. You really do, because the clarity goes out. And so it's really important for both parents and children to get enough sleep. And it is just, as you said, just setting the routine. And, you know, children love routine. They really do love routine. It, as you were saying, it makes them feel safe and secure, and they know what's coming. And I can remember talking with my brother who had twins, and very much one of the twins was very outward and gregarious, but the other one was a lot more shy. And he would ask every day if, because my brother was in the armed forces for some years, and he would just check, which bed am I sleeping in? And it was one of his anxieties. Mm-hmm. So Andrew basically would tell him, you know, they would have the conversation at least twice during the day of, yes, you're sleeping at home tonight. Yes, you will be in your own bed. And it's amazing how... what anxieties actually children do have. And it's important to remember, and I think this is one of the most amazing things for me, was to realise that our brain is still maturing and growing up to the age of 24. Now, I had to take a breath when I first heard that, and I can remember hearing it when I was doing child psychology. Yeah, that is just, I didn't realise that. But when you actually think about it, you know, a lot of young adults are in university at that time, or going on to further education. And you just look at it and go, wow, somebody got that right then. You know, it is the last stage of brain growth between 17 and 24. But I was amazed and quite surprised about that. Any thoughts on that, Jill, or is it just a case of, no, wow?
that is quite a while, but as you say, it does make sense. And I mean, it's very interesting in a way when we look back and we say, you know, when I was growing up, the age of adulthood was 21. You became an adult at 21. And now then legally it's now 18. But when you think about that, you think, well, actually, in terms of taking full responsibility for your life, et cetera, et cetera, then it makes sense that, you know, it's in the ballpark of 24 years in terms of fully maturing into adulthood. So it's interesting, actually.
It is, and the trouble is nowadays is everybody wants to do things quick, you know, it's smash and grab, isn't it? And this is the way it is. But actually, you know, with brain growth and brain maturity, it takes time, you know. When we actually look at the, you know, the different ways of describing the brain growth, and you know, there's all sorts of things like the reptile brain and the monolithic brain and the this brain and the that brain, and you just look at it and go, okay, fair enough, do I really need to know all of these things? But it's very much about, you know, the different ages where different things are actually being addressed. And when you look at the age of sort of two and a half, and for 10 years, so it's from two and a half to 12, this is where our, you know, the survival of the group is. Mm. It's where kids actually start becoming more social, and they're looking at developing their personalities and their self-confidence and their trust. And, you know, it's really important from 2 to 12 to actually establish discipline and help the children establish discipline within themselves. Because, as I said, you know, this is very much about self-confidence and trust. You know, too much self-confidence turns into entitlement, you know. And it's really important to, you know, have that balance. And, you know, those years those 10 years are so important for the child to have balance in their lives. You know, obviously, you know, too little discipline is not great, but too much discipline is not great. So it is, as I was saying, about that balance. And teaching them, you know, assertiveness is good, because yes to what you want is, you know, actually great, but no to what they actually don't want is just as important. So it's, you know, the assertiveness needs to be balanced, because otherwise they will go into domination, and they will come up with, you know, kids are great for this. They will use manipulation. They'll use seductiveness. They will not learn how to be genuine. You know, they will seek and do favors, so that in the manipulation game, and they'll be looking, you know, and they do learn this, and they do learn that from their peers, as well as they learn it from their parents, you know, because this is where peer pressure comes in about, you know, well, if I smile really nicely, I'll get another sweet. Or if, you know, Hector's great one is if he goes, please, please, he, you know, again, he's looking for biscuits. But, you know, it's a please, please, and that angelic smile. And, you know, sometimes, you know, for me, it's teaching him, you get two biscuits, one for each hand. And that's it. That's your lot. And however much you go into plead, or you go into manipulation, or you go into angelic, you actually see them bringing in these cast of characters. And, you know, from a spiritual point of view, we talk about archetypes. And boy, oh boy, do kids play around with archetypes. And again, it's just it's an opportunity to encourage a little bit of self-humour, a little bit of looking at your behaviour. And I go, you know, for me, I just look at him and go, really? And he'll just look at me and smile even bigger. And I'll go, no, you know, again, it's about hearing what I've said. You get two, that's it. And it's also, it was a really interesting experience to see him go through potty training and actually help him go through potty training. Because if he actually did a pee-pee in the toilet, he got one sweet. And if he did a poo-poo in the toilet, he got two sweets. So it was really, obviously, and then the routine of washing your hands and, you know, all that type of stuff as well, teaching him all of that. And he would basically bounce into the kitchen and go, and he, obviously, we had a container with the sweets in, and he would just, you know, okay, fair enough. But he then understood that chocolate was the best thing since sliced bread. He gets that from his mother, by the way, because I'm a chocolate-holic. And he wasn't into candy. Candy was, just chocolate. And it's, again, what is so wonderful nowadays is you can get charts, and he got a chart and a star and, you know, obviously a chocolate and stuff like that. And we got through the whole thing within 3 weeks, which was pretty amazing. So he was completely and utterly dry during the day. And we did have a couple of situations where we have a dog, you know, we have a Labrador, and he would watch the Labrador go out into the garden and have a pee in the garden and obviously a poo in the garden. So he thought that was the game. So we had to actually put that, make sure he didn't consider himself a Labrador. And actually, you know, it took about 3 weeks for him to get to the fact that it was the toilet that we were using and not the garden. But, it did lead to a lot of amusement from not just ourselves, but from our neighbours as well. So it again, there's so much written about toilet training, and you know, very much about, you know, using the positive statements and not the negative statements, and not actually saying do not do that. It's a case of turning it around and actually just using positivity and just, you know, huge amounts of praise when they actually do the right thing, rather than something that you make sure your eyebrows go up. It's just like, okay, fine. So again, it's very much important to look at those behaviours that a child is doing, so that again they do learn kindness, they do learn sharing, they do learn what the boundaries are, what the healthy and safe boundaries are, without too much no, don't do that, no, don't do that, no, don't do that. Because if you give too much discipline, and they will become submissive. And, you know, that leads later on to, you know, when they do something right, they feel that they've been lucky. And when they do something wrong, it's their fault. And if that is severe, then it will go into a melancholy depression. And, you know, they will also not learn, you know, when trust is lacking, it's what marginalises people and leads to, you know, paranoia and thinking that, oh, I never get anything right, I'm always wrong, yakka, yakka, yakka. And they set up these looping thoughts, which then leads to, as I said, you know, a real depression. And, you know, when you see children who are like that, it's really quite difficult then to turn it around and give them as much reassurance as they need. And, you know, obviously the other part of this is when, you know, we've had the lack of trust, but when people over-trust, where, you know, there is a gullibility of... they will believe everything and anything. And, you know, even to the stage where, I mean, I'm sure we have all suffered and we've all had the spam where we've had people contacting us from Nigeria or, I don't know, you know, somewhere, and saying, you know, one of my relatives have died and, you know, if you send me your details, I'll send you... you know, £1,000, well, not even £1,000, it's usually a couple of million, isn't it? And you can have 20% of it. And people actually believe in that. And, you know, this is set up, you know, that gullibility is set up between the ages of 2 and 12. And you look at that and go, wow. I mean, I know in my life I've had times where I can be quite native and I look at it and just go, wow, that's interesting. And I have a tendency to trust people more than not trust them. But I have learnt over many years, by the way, that actually, you know, caution is a good thing. It's one thing I didn't probably learn in my first 12 years of life. I don't think I learned too much caution. I was quite like Jill, and you know, as in, you know, leaping all over the place and just trusting it was going to be okay. So rules are important. They really are important. And it's, you know, it's really important that you... are consistent and the rules don't change. Don't change. I mean, it can change. Don't work, as Jill was talking about. If there's, you know, if somebody is ill, or you know, it's a special birthday, or you're doing something special. Yes, of course, then the rules can change. But it's also important to build the consistency that actually, when you say no, you mean no, and you don't give in. Because that's when you actually see children who just keep on pestering and pestering and pestering, because they know they're going to get their own way in the end. And it's really important to have those rules and those boundaries, and obviously to have discussed them with your partner. And, you know, once, if you do that for the first 4 years of a child's life, you will actually consistently get good behaviour. You know, after four, obviously they're going to test the limits, because that's what a child is all about. And they'll look at you on, they'll look at you and go, oh, I wonder if I can push this one. And they will test you, but you will actually be able to realise that they are consistently doing a behaviour that is not just helpful to you, but is helpful to them. And, you know, it's really important to get that in place, so that there is, there's a foundation in which the child can build and look at their, look at their likes, look at their dislikes, and actually begin to look at what they're interested in, and you know, for you as a parent to be able to nurture their talents and the things that they enjoy. I mean, for me, I don't know with Camilla and your troupe. did you have some indication of where they would like to be, or as obviously they're adults now? So did they show early their talents, or whenabouts did they sort of decide what they would like to do?
I think probably they're quite all-rounders, and they're quite rounded in all their skills and talents. So I don't think it was kind of that obvious at an early age. Alex is very, and my son is very creative and likes to make and build things. So he's doing a lot of that, not necessarily in work, but in his own life. And Camilla is very much a people person and always has been. So she works with people. She's teacher, you know. So yeah, it's interesting actually, because I always kept an open mind about what they would do. You know, I wasn't putting anything on to them at all about that. I think for me, I think as well, part of being conscious parent is maintaining a kind of air of curiosity or objectivity about, okay, you know, as well as being engaged with that, with the process, but also at the same time going, okay, what is this behaviour about? What can I learn? How can I support them as well? You know, it's a kind of maintaining an interest. I've always had an interest. I think some people don't appear to have an interest in their children. I just think they're missing a trick somehow around that, you know. Because it's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and and especially with me, I just love every day. It's just, you know, it's amazing how many different things we get up to. Because you know, I hate to being a 3-year-old. You could be doing 20 different things during the day, because you know their attention span is not necessarily that as good as an adult's. But yeah, it's been great to talk about this, and I think we will. What I've asked Jill to do is that we will actually continue on a similar line for next week, because it is fascinating, and it is many years to go yet to actually talk about. So we'll be back next week talking about being conscious parents, because that never changes, I don't think. Okay, you take care and have a great week.
Bye.